page 196. And so we'll take a break after today's class and we'll resume. Should we have a class before Tisha B'Av?
Oh, before Tisha B'Av.
Okay. Before Tisha B'Av.
Usually
we have before.
What do we do? So I will see. We'll see. We'll keep you all posted.
When is okay. Tisha B'Av?
Tisha B'Av is 3 weeks from Sunday.
July 26th.
Yes, it's a Sunday.
And when does the 3 weeks start?
This Sunday.
This is a Sunday.
Yeah. Okay. So we're actually going to finish a section today. We're on page 196. We just have one paragraph to do inside, which is the little paragraph 18. And the reason why I wanted to save this for a separate component is because up until now, Rabbi Yehuda Halevi has given us a very detailed explanation about how the entire temple structure, the Mishkan structure, is really a macrocosm of the human body, and that God, who dwells within the temple, is like the soul that joins together with the physical body that is within the human being. So we are all a microcosm of a more universal concept, and God told us to create a construct which would act as the national body for the Jewish people, which is the Mishkan, which is the tabernacle or the Beis HaMikdash. And today, we certainly don't have that structure. We don't have the soul infusing itself within our nationhood. And that's something that we're going to discuss later on about the lamentable reality of the fact that we are without certain of those basic amenities that we used to have that were so basic to the Jewish people. But the last paragraph that he says over here is where he tries to explain that there's a certain system and a certain profound wisdom that goes into explaining every single detail of every single mitzvah. In other words, for Rabbi Yehuda Halevi, nothing is arbitrary. Every single detail of every single mitzvah has a purpose and has a reason. And that's what he was trying to explain, is that every different component of the tabernacle, of the sacrificial service, every single dimension, every single vessel, every single utensil represents a different part of the body. And just like if you had a small organ missing from your body, even if like a person didn't have a gallbladder, God forbid, some people don't have a gallbladder, right? But if you don't have a gallbladder, that compromises your health. If you're missing an appendix or if you're missing some other kind of organ, sometimes it makes a big difference, sometimes it makes a small difference, but it certainly makes a difference. The same thing would be true if there was anything, any small item missing from the Beis HaMikdash. It would not accomplish the same goal, because just like a soul cannot be healthy unless its corresponding body is healthy, God's Shekhinah cannot rest in a healthy way within the Jewish people if there's not that national body of a temple that's constructed properly with all of its various different accessories. So, says Rabbi Yehuda Halevi, all was done with order and planned by divine wisdom. But then he makes one sort of disclaimer. He says, I do not declare, heaven forbid, that the absolute intention of the sacrificial order was as I have described it. He's quite honestly confessing that this is the way he understands it. There's no tradition from Sinai that he can claim that he has a monopoly upon to say that it's exactly as the way he's describing it. The intention was actually more wondrous and lofty. After all, the sacrificial order is part of God's Torah, and one who accepts the Torah completely without first rationalizing it with his intellect is greater than one who rationalizes and investigates everything. Now that's the bold statement that I wanted to focus on today. He says that when it comes to anything having to do with the Torah, one who accepts the Torah completely without first rationalizing it with his intellect is greater than one who rationalizes and investigates everything. You're better off accepting the Torah system without trying to make sense of it. Okay? But nevertheless, one who descends from that high level, if you don't have that emuna pishuta, if you don't have that simple faith, and you need an explanation, otherwise you're not satisfied, and seeks to understand reasons, is better off basing his explanations on accurate wisdom then forsaking them for poor interpretations and questions which lead to spiritual destruction. So I know my audience, says Rabbi Yehuda Halevi. I'm not dealing with the elite community as my audience who are reading this book. Because the elite community would not need a Kuzari in the first place. Why did Rebbe, remember, let's go back. Why did Rebbe Yehuda Halevi write this book in the first place? He's writing a book for the members of his generation and his community in Spain, who are starting to feel that a lack of confidence in the system, of the Torah system, starting to feel a lack of confidence in Judaism in general, because they see they're part of a parent culture in Andalusian Spain, in southern Spain, which is dominated by an Islamic society which is very, very steeped in intellect and in philosophy. And here we are as the Jewish community, and we're not so intellectual. We're not so fancy. We're not so involved in sophistry and dialectic philosophy. And we don't appear to be as articulate and as sophisticated as the counterparts that are in the secular culture, right, as part of, you know, the Islamic philosophical Spain. And so therefore, I wrote this book to be able to give you greater sense of confidence and pride in who you are as a Jew. That just because it may seem at face value that they're more sophisticated than us, they're really not, because they don't possess truth. They're only hypothesizing truth based on their own intellects. And we have a truth that comes from a much, much deeper source that has mystical truths within it that sometimes defy explanation. And therefore, because I'm not dealing with the elite audience who are prepared to accept everything, to just accept the gospel, as it were, I need to provide you with rational explanations to show you that even on an intellectual level, to sort of, this is what you are hungry for. You're hungry for sort of an intellectual approach to Torah. Fine, I'll present it to you. But understand that the highest level of Torah acceptance is what we would call emuna peshuta, a belief that there's such profundity to the Torah and to the contents of the Torah that they transcend the intellect, and therefore to the necessity to even understand all the facets and details of the mitzvahs really should not be necessary. Now, how many of you, okay, I see the hand up. I know we're ready. You're ready for the attack. I got you. Yeah. But I'm simply presenting the approach that Rabbi Yehuda Halevi is taking at this point. Mrs. Sochachevsky, go ahead.
I don't know. I just heard you read the sentence in the Kuzari, and I don't understand it the same way you do.
Go ahead.
It doesn't sound to me like he's saying that we shouldn't delve into the reasons for the mitzvahs. It sounds to me like he's saying that understanding the reasons is not the first step. You have to first accept you're going to do it, Nasa v'nishma, but your understanding, it doesn't have to be a factor in doing it, but that doesn't mean that it is a wonderful thing to understand it. And just on a very basic level, I see that people who love certain things want to know all the minutiae about that thing. Let's say I like decorating. There are decorating magazines and websites and books dedicated to the total trivialities about decorating. Or if someone's into sports, they want to know every stupid thing about sports. So if someone is in love with...
You notice how she said stupid things about sports, but didn't say stupid things about decorating.
Is that what? That's understandable.
Yes, of course. Yeah, we all understand that.
So
yes.
If someone is in love with something, they want to know everything about it.
Good.
So just on a basic level, if Torah is supposed to be our whole life, then I don't see why you would just say, I'll do it, I don't need to understand it, I'm just doing it.
You're right, but what he's explaining is as follows. The basis of our faith should not be predicated on our need to understand.
Absolutely.
That's what he's saying.
No and coffee today.
We have enough here.
It's okay.
I know. That's why I didn't bring you. Okay. I feel like I'm missing something in my hand.
But that doesn't mean that we shouldn't delve into the reasons.
And And that's why if you look at footnote number 235 on the bottom of the page, hence King Shlomo said, do not be excessively wise. Al techkam harbe. While the rabbi downplays the use of intellect in issues of faith, he is not advocating that one remove intellect completely from his faith where the opposite is necessary. What is most important is that one's acceptance of Torah doctrine not be contingent upon his ability to understand.
Exactly.
Okay,
but I still take issue with the idea that it's a higher level to say, I will do everything and I don't need to understand.
Nasa v'nishma.
No, as opposed to, I will do everything and I want to understand it. It's not predicated upon it.
It's not predicated upon it.
It's an addition.
Right, but you notice that Rabbi Yehuda HaLevi does say, at least this is the Hebrew that we have in front of us, Ach mishenata mehamadrega ha'elyona ha'hi el ha'mechkar. Someone who digresses or goes away from that higher level of not requiring any explanation.
But that's why I brought up the example of when you're
interested. I understand.
You want to know everything about it.
I understand. But that's assuming, you see, but the point that I think he's trying to make is that you can't compare Torah knowledge and issues of Emunah with things that have a finite amount of information. What his point is that really there's an infinite amount of depth to Torah. And therefore, no matter how many websites you can go to, you'll never plumb the true depth of what this mitzvah is all about. You'll never understand it. And therefore, it's an exercise in futility to even begin to try, because you may scratch the surface and you may get a cursory understanding that you may find to be intellectually satisfying, but ultimately you need to acknowledge that I'm never going to get it really, and therefore I might as well accept it completely on faith with the understanding that the wisdom involved in this mitzvah is so deep, is so infinite, and is so mystical that it's completely beyond me.
What about Lo Alecha Hamlecha L'Gmar? V'lo Ata Ben Chorin L'Yibatel Mimenu.
Okay, but so for Rabbi Yehuda HaLevi, that would not necessarily address intellectual exercise. That may address mitzvahs. You know, so there's different approaches. So, you know, again, there's this dialectic within our faith between being a Maimonidean and being a Halevian. Okay? If you want to be Maimonidean, it's your prerogative. But understand that Rabbi Yehuda HaLevi views sometimes the intellect as a liability, because it sometimes hinders us from being able to have this principle or this concept called Emuna Peshuta. I reference an essay from Rev Dessler in the footnote, and I wanted to just read a few paragraphs. The essay actually is much larger. He starts off the essay, this is from volume 3 in the Michtav Meliyahu. It starts on page 175, but we're just going to start looking at it on page 177. Reb Dessler talks about the story of Rabbi Elisha ben Abuya, who later became known as Acher, because he became an apostate, he became a heretic. And the question is, what is it that made him become a heretic? So there are two sort of texts that Rabbi Eliyahu Dessler focuses on. One is that at his bris, Rabbi Elisha ben Abuya's father noted that the rabbis were learning Torah with such fervor, he said, I wish I could have that kind of joy and benefit for my child as well. And so the Medrash, or it's really a Gemara Yerushalmi, says that because his objective in sending his son to study Torah was because he saw the emotional benefit that people get from studying Torah, since he was shelo lishma, he wasn't doing it for the sake of Talmud Torah, for the sake of the mitzvah, but he was doing it because he saw how beneficial it was, he was not rewarded with a son who would be able to carry through for his entire life and being righteous in his Torah pursuits. There's another Gemara, however, which seems to trace Rabbi Elisha ben Abuya's apostasy to his pursuit of the study of philosophy. The fact that he was so devoted to philosophical speculation and the study of Greek philosophy was what led to his demise in a spiritual sense. That he tried to intellectualize everything and try to understand everything on a deep philosophical level within Judaism, that caused his downfall. And Rav Dessler traces that, you know, and he says, and this is the part of the essay where I want to jump into, emunah v'chakira. You see that paragraph, emunah v'chakira, which is faith and philosophy, or faith and philosophical speculation. That's what the word chakira means over here. The word chakira actually is a neutral word. It's neither negative or positive. It simply means delving into something deeply. But in this context, the way that Rav Dessler is using it, he's really means studying philosophy. Everyone have that in their in this handout that I have for you? He says, Zohi gam derech ha'aliyah be'emunah. He first talks about mystical study, and he says that sometimes you can only really comprehend something after studying it a number of times without delving into it too deeply. He says, Hisalus be'emunah pinimit. He says the path towards elevating yourself or in, reinforcing your inner faith, madrega achar madrega, can only be accomplished in a very gradual way, step after step. Ba'a al yedei hitamkut b'torah atzma. It can only come through a delving into Torah study, not through a study of Kant and Descartes and the Greek classics. V'lo al yedei chakirot haseichel mufshatot. It cannot just be a delving into philosophy that is divested of a Torah context. Okay, ta'uti, by the way, Rav Dessler studied a lot of Kant and a lot of Descartes. He was not unlettered. He was very well educated, although his later biographers did not let on how educated he was. He studied a lot of secular knowledge. But he wants to point out to us that if you really want to reach Emunah, it's not going to come from the university. It's not going to come from the textbook. He says, "Ta'ut hi lachshov sheicholim lahasig et ha'amunah hamuchletet al yedei chakirot sichliot ufilosofia." He says it's a mistake to think that a person can arrive at absolute faith through using intellectual investigation and philosophy. Hare haseichel mishuchad al yedei kol minei nigiot. He says, because after all, this is a beautiful sentence. He says, the intellect is mishuchad. How would you translate mishuchad?
Bribed.
Is bribed, is on the take. Is bribed because of all different forms of biases and prejudices. Just look at the recent U.S. Supreme Court decision. You think that was done purely based on intellect? Of course not. There are prejudices within society. There are pressures within society that cause a person or even an entire society to come to certain conclusions, to read the Constitution in a certain way based upon the conventional political pressures or winds that are blowing in one direction or another. Okay, that's a perfect example. Haratzon mate et haseichel la'an shehu chafetz. After all, we know that desire sways the intellect to whichever direction that desire wishes. In other words, if you want it to be so, you'll find the intellectual argument for it to be so. Kishehaadam pone el sichlo b'terem hitamek batorah. When a person turns and relies upon his intellect before fully delving into the Torah, ubiseis et emunato al kabbalat avot ve'emunat chachamim. If a person instead bases his faith on what he has received from his ancestors, and he places his faith in the wisdom of the sages, and he wants his intellect to sort of guide him on matters of faith. So what he wants to do is like this. You know what he says? He says, okay, I'm not going to worry about faith so much from Torah study. I'll rely on the fact that I believe that we have a Mesorah, and then I'll study philosophy in the university. He says, "Siman hu she'eino rotze la'amin, l'chein pone el shofet mishuchad she'yore lo kirtzono." He says that's a sign that he really doesn't want to believe. If you don't use the Torah itself as your basis for faith, and you just sort of say, okay, the Torah is a study that I studied in school, and it's not going to be my basis for faith, it's my basis for knowledge of Judaism, which I assume is correct, but I'll when I want to be able to figure out how, you know, how I know that this stuff is true, I'll study philosophy. He says that's a sign that you really don't want to believe, because if you wanted to believe, this is his argument, you would use the Torah itself as your basis. Haseichel gam mugbal. He says, and after all, you have to remember, the intellect is limited. Ki ha-machshava miyusedet al tziurim gashmiim sheheim mugbalim. Because after all, thought, conscious thought, is limited by three-dimensional, or actually four-dimensional time-space. And there are certain esoteric and abstract concepts which transcend the thought process. He says, faith that comes from a person's inner core, which is not based upon intellectual arguments, those limitations will not be able to delimit his faith. Uchbar Kosov HaRebbe Reb Nachman Mibreslov Zatzal, Shebemokom Asher Sham Gvulo Shel HaSeichel Sham Matchila HaEmunah. He says something very profound. He says, you know where intellect ends, where the boundaries of intellect end, that's where faith begins. Faith, by definition, is a transcension of intellect. There are certain things that the human mind simply can't comprehend. What exists beyond our universe? What existed before God created the universe? The Gemara says, not even, the Mishnah says, don't even think about those things. But you want to know something? Those are the areas where faith takes over. Because to try and conceptualize concepts like beings that exist beyond time and space is not something that even our intellects are capable of doing properly. And yet that's precisely what God is. God is a being who transcends time and space. So the only way that we can understand God is through faith, not through intellect, is what Rabbi Nachman is saying. Amnam chuyavnu levarer et emunatenu al yedei haseichel kedivrei ba'al chovot halevavot b'hakdamato. Now here he says what Mrs. Sochachevsky is saying. On the other hand, he says, we are obligated to substantiate our faith using intellect, like the Chovos HaLevavos writes in his introduction. Achein hagisha lo tehe. He says, however, the approach when using your intellect as a tool to substantiate your faith should not be masha ani mevin besichli akabel or masha sichli eino masig lo akabel chalila. Person's attitude should not be, you know, whatever I can understand intellectually, I will accept. Whatever I don't understand intellectually, I shall not accept because I have no basis for that belief. Eina kavana sheyismoch al sichlo bilvad. He says that's not what a person should be doing, that you should rely exclusively on your seichel. The Chovos HaLevavos never meant that. Ki bazeh lo yuchal lahagia af pa'am el birur ha'emet. Because then you'll never really arrive at the real truth. Ki hu mishuchad meritzonotav v'gam mugbal kanal. He says, because remember, the intellect is a very biased and subjective party, and it is also limited in its ability to understand things. So you'll never arrive at real absolute truth if you just rely on your intellect. Geder birur ha'emunah al yedei haseichel hu. So therefore, the way that we understand, so then what is the role of the intellect in trying to reaffirm faith? Is as follows. Acharei shenityashva kavar ha'emuna b'libo al yedei kabbalat avot. That once you've already established that I believe in the Torah, and I believe in the wisdom, the timeless wisdom of the Torah, and I substantiate it based upon a tradition that I have from my parents, my grandparents, my great-grandparents, going all the way back, there's a tradition, a very, very proud and very strong tradition that has survived the generations of pogroms and persecutions. So that indicates to us that there's something substantive to it that cannot be shaken, it cannot be broken. Even if I don't understand it completely. But I know that there's something there. And that's the first step, is that accepted through the tradition. And then, v'al yedei limud ha-Torah ha-kidosha, v'hakarat gedulata u'gedulat chachamein. And then the next step is study the Torah and appreciate the profundity of the text, both of the written Torah and the oral Torah. Then, after you've done that, ya'asok adam lekarev el sichlo et yisodot ha'emunah levararam la'atzmo bibirur sichli. Then a person can then, the third step would be to engage in intellectual exercises to be able to make these things intellectually satisfying as well. So he may not be saying exactly what Reb Yehuda HaLevi is saying, because Reb Yehuda HaLevi says there's an optimal and then there's a less than optimal. For Reb Yehuda HaLevi, optimal is tradition and appreciate the profound wisdom of the Torah and whose depths you'll never be able to fully understand. For Rev Dessler, he tries to reconcile it. He says, no, intellect is a possibility. It's part and parcel of our obligation to study Torah and to strengthen our faith, but only after my faith has been firmly established on a bedrock of tradition and Torah study. Once that's been firmly established, I can study philosophy and other areas of secular study that will help reinforce the emunah that I already have. And then we'll just do one more paragraph. Yes?
I feel like they're addressing two different things, because it sounds like the Kuzari was saying accepting Torah versus studying Torah, and Rav Dessler is talking about secular philosophy, and the Kuzari is not even discussing that. He's saying you shouldn't study secular philosophy, but you should delve into the Torah. So
I don't know that you necessarily have to make a dividing line for Rabbi Yehuda HaLevi. There's really not that much difference between intellectual speculation that's either of a Torah nature or a philosophical nature. Maybe because Rav Dessler is writing in a more modern era, he makes this very, very stark distinction between the two. Rav Dessler's point, I believe, is very similar to what Rabbi Yehuda HaLevi is saying. The point is this. Emuna is established not through logic. Emuna is established through belief. And belief sometimes transcends logic. We can't always quantify how we know the things that we believe to be true are true. Because by their very nature, issues of faith transcend logic. However, to whatever extent you can use logic, you can use philosophy to help strengthen your issues of faith, you're mandated to do so. But only after you've already established that you believe in those things. If you're going to try to use logic or philosophy as an attempt to help you better believe what you think you're supposed to believe, it probably won't work. In other words, if a person is a tabula rasa, you're a blank slate, and you say, I don't know if I believe or I don't believe, let me study logic. Logic may or may not get you to that destination. There are plenty of people who are very, very smart and who are complete, not only agnostics, but atheists. And that's in itself the biggest proof that just because you're logical and you have a very strong intellect doesn't mean you're going to arrive at the same truths that we believe from a Judaic or a biblical standpoint. That's really the only point that we're trying to make. Yes?
So what happened with Acher then? He was a big gadol before.
Right.
And you said he was in, really into philosophy, or did he not have a strong... before?
Apparently, that's Rav Dessler's argument. His argument is that there were two things that went wrong for him, like it was a lethal combination. Number one, he was engaged in Torah Shelo Lishma. He wasn't doing it for the altruistic purpose of just to serve Hashem. He had ulterior motives in mind. And number two, can we close the door, please? And number two, he started to rely too heavily on his intellect as the basis for his belief. And somewhere down the road, he lost his way. He lost his way.
Reminds me, I'm thinking back as we're reading this, of all the brilliant philosophy professors I had in City University in New York, many of whom came from homes and were so brilliant about philosophy, but were atheistic, against Judaism, and it's just obvious that you can't, I don't know, to me it's obvious that you can't come to Torah from a general approach.
Look, Robert, I remember, I don't know if I hear from you or I can't remember from Mexico, Vancouver, I don't know, but I hear that one day you say, it's when you go to the doctor and the doctor says you have to take this medication. So you are not going to investigate what is this, what contains.
Yeah, that's from Rabbi Yehuda Halevi.
Exactly. Exactly.
Yeah.
I think you.
Yeah, you picked it up here.
Yeah. Okay.
In Mexico, you argue with them,
don't you?
Okay, we'll do one more paragraph. Let's just do one more paragraph quickly. Pitui al yedei sakranut is the name of this little paragraph. He says seduction through curiosity is the name of the paragraph. Let's please, if we could just focus our attention on this, please. The Torah says, do not stray after your heart and after your eyes. Yesh koach ba'adam v'sakranut shemo. There's a certain faculty within man. We call that the faculty of curiosity. You know, curiosity killed the cat. Mm-hmm. But curiosity can be either a positive or a negative. He says, "Shirotze litom v'la'amod al tivam shel dvarim shemichutz mimenu." Curiosity is the thing that causes you to want to figure out things that are outside of yourself, that are currently outside of your understanding. Koach ze nitan lanu kidei la'orer et ha'iyun b'divrei Torah shenishaf. He says, this faculty was given to us in order to help arouse us to want to study areas of Torah that we would normally, you know, that we haven't yet experienced. So Hashem wants us to get a full palette of Torah. So he gives us this power of curiosity. So, you know, today I've studied Chumash, the next day I want to study Nach, and then I'm going to want to study Midrash or Mishnah or, you know, Hashkafa or whatever it is. However, the evil inclination can sometimes corrupt that curiosity. And it will use that very same faculty of curiosity, which could be used for something very, very positive, to say, I'm curious, I want to see the world, I want to go to the Himalayas, I want to taste every flavor of ice cream at 31 flavors or whatever it is. Aval lifnei sheta'am mehara mesit hayetzer hara ba'adam ve'omer lo nenasot. And therefore, even before a person has tasted the thing that's bad, that's evil, the Yetzer will tell you, come on, try it out. V'lu pam echad, but just try it one time. I'll just try it one time, and then once I've had it, don't you have a curiosity about certain things that you know are like forbidden, but you just want to try it? Just once, just to see what it's like. I'm not going to share with you what mine is, but I'm sure you can. But there's plenty of stuff that, you know, like for this is forbidden, but yeah, try it just once. So the Gemara therefore says, do not stray after your hearts, which is referring to apostasy, and refers to actual sin. Lishnei dvarim eila, or thoughts of sin. Lishnei dvarim eila lifnei sheta'am tamachet v'adayin in lo kesher eleihem. So, like these are intellectual flaws. Before you've actually tasted the sin, and before you have any connection to sin, yesh la'adam cheshek v'ta'ava l'to'ama mitoch sakranut. A person has this curiosity to try, like the Shlomo HaMelech said, mayim genuvim yimtaku, that stolen waters are sweeter, because you know that. It's something that's beyond your reach, you see it looks much more appetizing than it really is. So, but then the problem is like this. So let's say you give in to that curiosity to try the forbidden fruit. So now the Yetzer Hara now has an in, right? He's already just, you know, bored that hole into your soul. So you sort of become addicted now to that practice, and it's very, very hard once you've already succumbed to that first little nibble. You now can, very difficult to break away, just like a drug addiction. You know, you just take that first hit of whatever the illicit drug is, and then you become hooked. Harchek me'aleha darkecha ve'al tikrav el petach beita, as Shlomo HaMelech says, that referring to a licentious woman is the parable, but it refers to any form of forbidden practice. Distance your pathway from her, and do not come close to her doorway. Kirak tzad echad mavdil bein cha levein ha'avera, because it's just one small step that divides between you and sin. And so therefore, that's how he characterizes where Acher is headed. Acher felt that he could you know, he could manage it. He could, you know, just take that little, you know, peel back the veil just a little bit, and succumb or to indulge his curiosity, his intellectual curiosity, and then starts to unravel. And so a person has to be very, very careful. I just want to finish with this idea. No one is chas v'chalila suggesting that a person who is curious should not indulge their curiosity if it's a healthy curiosity, right? Because without curiosity for knowledge, you know, to try and suppress that intellectual curiosity, I think is wrong. But what Rav Dessler is just observing for us is that intellectual curiosity can be inherently dangerous if it's not checked properly. You should delve into things. You should investigate things. You should look into things. But realize that there's an occupational hazard to intellectual curiosity. You could, if you want to study philosophy and you want to be able to take that course in the university on biblical criticism or... actually, I've said this before. I believe that the most harmful university course for our children, for our youth, is a Bible course, is biblical criticism. I think it's more harmful than philosophy. Because philosophy, okay, so philosophy is in the abstract, and how you apply it is how you apply it. Psychology is not as harmful because there are so many truths in psychology, even though there are some untruths as well. But the most harmful part is the Bible criticism. But even that, you know, I've told my own kids. I said, if you go in with the proper emuna, and you have the proper bedrock of faith, and you approach the questions that you are presented with in this course with the proper attitude of there are questions and there are answers. And just because there are questions doesn't mean force us to come to a certain conclusion. So then it can be done, it can be maneuvered. But one has to realize that there are certain occupational hazards to indulging one's intellectual curiosity. Yes?
A few years ago I read God Is Not Good by Christopher Hitchens. And I happened to be in a shiur, I won't leave the rabbi's name unmentioned. And he had a reaction. He said, why did you read that? Why did you waste your time? And I said, because I just wanted to see what he had to say. It didn't have any influence on me. In fact, I was quite disgusted. Mm. But that was his attitude. Why are you reading that?
Yes, and there is a prevailing attitude in many religious circles of don't waste your time reading these things because they'll only lead you down a dark path. And I believe that this was Rabbi Yehuda Halevi's attitude as well. His feeling was, and remember, it depends who your audience is. If you're speaking to an audience who you feel might be easily influenced and could be harmed, and their emuna could be harmed, then you have to caution them. But even when you caution them, you have to do it in a way that is, it has to be done wisely. When you caution someone, you know, I don't know whether I would say you're wasting your time. I would say, well, that's a challenging book. You know, he's got some really good issues that he raises. Are you up to the task? Are you prepared to take on the challenge? Because, you know, there are some texts that even I stay away from because I don't know that I have the intellectual and religious fortitude to be able to tackle every single, you know, if I were to read a mountain of books about why atheism is correct, I probably, after a while, I would get worn down. I think anyone would get worn down after a while. So it has to be done with the proper dosage and the proper context, you know, and all of these other things. Okay, yes?
I just wanted to, like Rabbi Dessler says, according to the realm that you are, the nature of a person is to be influenced whether or not they want or not. Like you have no choice. It's like the sun shines in the sky, you're going to just look like that, you're going to be influenced. A person is influenced by their environment, but what they read, but what they see.
It's natural.
It's a natural.
But you're mishuchad, he says. Your mishuchad means that if, as long as you're cognizant of your own prejudices and biases, then there is a possibility of recognizing, hey, you know what? I'm not thinking this through carefully, and I have every. And if you're very self-aware, then you can. Then sometimes you can maneuver it. It all depends on where the person is holding.
But still, you're supposed to be in a place, even your environment is supposed to be in a place of good people coming.
Absolutely. You have to surround yourself in a healthy environment. That's the point I'm making.